Hello, I'm Susan McNaughton, the Communications Director for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. I'm working on a project where we collect oral histories, specifically about the 1989 Camp Hill riot. However, we would be remiss if we didn't mention an incident that took place prior to that, that took place at SCI Rockview. Talking to us today, September 18th, 2019, about the Rockview incident is John McCullough. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hello.
Before we begin, John, could you please provide us with a brief overview of your DOC career?
Yes, I started as a social work intern at the old Eastern State Penitentiary in 1967. I was there in 1967 to 1968. I was in the federal system for several years, and then I came back to Rockview as the director of treatment in 1974. And by the way, I got back to Rockview because I had known Dr. Mazurkiewicz at Eastern.
Okay.
I was the director of treatment there till late 89. And then after the Camp Hill riots, I was appointed the acting deputy superintendent for treatment at Camp Hill when they fired the three, the deputy and the two deputies and the warden.
Mm-hmm.
Came back to Rockview as the deputy superintendent for treatment. I went in 95 to Houtsdale as a superintendent there for 8 years. That last year as a superintendent there, I was a supervising superintendent. They used to divide it up, so I had three other institutions that reported to me. And then I was a deputy secretary for the Western Region from 2003 to 2004. And then I got out.
Okay. Wow, that's a long career. Congratulations on all that you did. So let's talk about the Rockview incident. And you had told me offline that it happened in February of 1989. So tell me what happened and its importance to the leading up to the Camp Hill riots.
Okay. As I remember, the system at that time, prison systems go through periods of just general unrest. And as I remember, there was any number of institutions that were kind of uneasy. I didn't particularly feel that at Rockview, and I spent a lot of time out with the inmates, but I didn't feel that, you know, that we had any real issues there. It all started with, as a lot of these do, with messing with an inmate that shouldn't be messed with. I don't know what started it, but it was a very minor misconduct. I think it was either a shirt tail out, or he was walking across a grass area where he couldn't. They yelled at him. He ran. And you never, ever run after an inmate, unless it's a drastic situation, because it creates cat and mouse, it looks unfair. So they chased the inmate into C Block, and C Block was on its way out to dinner. This happened around 3:30 in the afternoon. And they were lined up ready to get dinner. He ran in among the crowd. The other inmates kind of pushed the officers off and said, "Man, you don't want to deal with this. This isn't cool." You know what I mean? And again, you don't chase people. You get them when you own the place. At 6 o'clock, at 10 o'clock, don't grab people out of population. Well, then he goes over to dinner, and they pull him out of the line and start grabbing him to cuff him up. He resists. And the crowd reacted and jumped on the officers. And the gate officer, Rockview at the time, had a gate officer who could open the gate from the dining room out into the yard. And if you know what Rockview looks like, the dining room, as you're facing toward the main cell blocks, to your left is C Block, to the front is Education Building, to the right was the old B Block. Anyway, he hits the thing, and these angry inmates come streaming out through the door. About that time, somebody had called the Browns. The maintenance and CI guys were on their way home. Somebody said, "There's a problem. Please come in." These guys, and a lot of these are older men, start coming up the walk on Long C Block, and the inmates just charged them. And none of these men in maintenance or CI ever mistreated inmates, ever did anything wrong. I mean, they're used to being instructors and helping them out, you know. They tore them apart. I don't know how many of them they knocked on the ground. And it was just this this very angry, thoughtless reaction. We were in the what was called the DW in that time. It was me, Bill Love, Tony D'Angelo, who's since dead, Bob Myers, who's since dead. Bob later became the superintendent at Rockview. Terry Whitman, Danny Harder, and we went out in the yard. And by the way, a lot of the inmates are afraid. They're streaming down the walks trying to get back into the cell blocks. It's mostly the C block guys, and they had, after they'd beaten all these people up, they just kind of stopped. Like, what in the hell did we just do? There was some really good officers out there. John Kephart, I think, was there. Because we generally had a fairly good relationship with inmates. Well, anyway, they surrounded us and just yelled and yelled and yelled and yelled. What can you do? You know what I mean? They yelled at us. And we say, you know what? We got seven or eight of them, or about 20 of them maybe, separated, got them to the education building to talk. And there was an inmate called Fat Freddy who had kind of taken over. And we said to Freddy, hey, look, let's the way to get out of this is everybody just go back to the cell blocks. You know? And I think they ran out of steam. They started realizing, oh, my God, we beat up these poor Browns. You know what I mean? So they go back to C block. Then the question becomes, what do you do? Do you lock down? And by the way, the department wasn't ready for that kind of stuff back then. We didn't have CERT teams. We didn't have the means of locking a lot of stuff down we do now. So we went over, a group of us went over to C block and kind of walked through there, and the inmates are settled down. We're in a part of this crap, you know. I think we should have locked down, but we didn't. And we actually fed that night and fed the next morning, and we drew a walk on it. There was no further problems. But the problem is it breaks the myth that staff are invincible. They saw how quick staff would go down, they'd get hit. And there was a lot of injuries. I bet you there's 40-some officers and CI people hurt.
Oh.
We transferred a couple guys that were troublemakers, but by and large, we had excellent block officers. And I remember calling over to the West Wing sergeant and saying, can you release? He says, these guys aren't going to give you any trouble. You know what I mean? He says, this isn't our block. This is C block. They did it. And so it kind of piddled out after that. But the trouble is, it gets the taste of blood out into the air.
Mm. Right.
So that's what happened there.
How long did that overall attack?
Oh, it happened right as they were doing the first line. The Browns were going home. I'd say it was about 10 to 4 it happened. We were back into the cell blocks, I think by 5, so we may have had an hour and 10 minutes out there. They started milling around, and then when we separated some of them, got them into this one place in an auditorium, the education building. A lot of times in these situations, some of your people, certain inmates will take charge. This wasn't planned. And the inmates that took charge really said, look, this isn't going anywhere. Let's just call it a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and how many inmates would you say were involved?
Oh, God, 100?
Okay.
I mean, they poured out of that, they poured out of that darning room.
Oh.
They were angry, and again, why piss around with a guy over a shirt tail?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what, by the way, a lot of these, that whole thing at Camp Hill started that E block about a pair of RHU flops.
Okay, great. And I want to get to that soon, too. But first, I wanted to ask about Rockview. Was the inside of the compound, inside the perimeter, open? Like, did we have a lot of internal fencing
there? Yeah, there was no way they could have actually, if they had wanted to, there was no fences cutting off the interior of that jail.
Okay.
If they wanted to, they could knock off the Tower 6 fence. They had the jail.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
Phew.
If they wanted it.
All right. So we know that happened, we think, in February of 89. And then I talked to Ben Varner about the Huntington October 23rd situation.
Right.
And so setting you up for Camp Hill. So we know that on Wednesday, October 25th, 1989, at the E Gate, that started the first night of rioting at Camp Hill, which went until about 11:30 midnight that Wednesday. Everything was supposedly secured. The next day, people reported to work on the 26th, and around 6:30 p.m. on the 26th of October, the inmates took control of the institution at Camp Hill again, and that finally came to an end around dawn on Friday, October 27th. So as a result of all of that, there were hearings and everything. The superintendent was relieved, as were his two deputy superintendents. Commissioner Owens appointed Crescent Superintendent Jeff Beard to come and head Camp Hill, and I guess he brought you along. So tell me from that point on, back up a little bit and talk to me about what started it, what your whole role was in investigating it, and also as being deputy superintendent shortly thereafter.
There's four of us were called down to do an internal investigation.
Okay.
It was me, Ken Kyler, Sam Andolino, and I think his name was James Moore. He was a black administrative captain at Greensburg. Wonderful, wonderful man. And we interviewed a whole bunch of people, and we wrote a report. And we went through the jail and things like that. And the trouble is that you hate to assess blame on these things. The inmates are obviously discontented. You can see the skyrocketing. When you have request slips going up that are complaints, grievances are going up, and misconduct's going up, you've got an issue. And you have to address the area where that issue is. So there's a number of things that pissed them off. There's something about the lunch baskets, or there's something also about the med lines. So I can't tell you what the internal place was in there. I know that when we got there, the staff were enormously angry, and felt they'd been betrayed, and I think they were surprised at the ferocity of the inmates. I certainly was. I mean, the place inside there is amazing what they could rip down, things like that. But I don't want to assess blame.
Right.
You know, I know that I know that there's many internal staffing issues in there that were going on. But the people you've talked to know a whole lot better about that than I do.
But you talked about the fact that you don't chase after an inmate and that you don't cause a problem over something minor. And then you said really what kind of sparked off the E-Gate thing at Camp Hill was, what did you say?
The guy came in through the gate with what are called RHU flops. In other words, you don't have enough shoes in RHU. They have these flops on so they can't kick us. The officer at E-Gate, and I don't even know his name, started getting on this guy about this thing of flops. Why? Okay. I mean, all you got to do is, hey, man, you shouldn't have that morning going about your business. And she kind of write up misconduct to it later. But you know, pick on these guys for small things. You know what I mean?
And this was at a point where like 400 other inmates were behind
him. Oh, God, it was yard that was coming in.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then I guess the guy sucker punched whoever this officer was. And of course, it's just the trouble is once you draw blood and they're pissed off because of the unfairness of the situation, you're going to have an issue, and they did.
Right.
And again, they beat up people they liked. You know, I don't know whether you remember Lieutenant Chapman. We call him Chappy. Man, what a wonderful man, and he's a black guy. Well, why'd they beat me up? He said, well, I didn't do anything to them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just being at the wrong place at the right time,
place at the wrong time, and you represent the authority.
Right. All right, so we know what happened at the Camp Hill riots, and we know that, you know, most of the prison was destroyed and everything, and then Jeff Beard comes along, and he brings you along. Tell me what it was like to rebuild that facility, to help the staff kind of get back on track with where they should be, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that the sad thing about this is that was a wonderful staff. when you look at the talent they had inside of there, and that those people came back in and worked, the only, let me just go through it. The commission officers are excellent. Kerstetter, Stottlemyre, that whole group. Medical was excellent. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all back in there working. The activities department, food service, the counseling people, the drug and alcohol people, they had a lot of really fine people there. But they had been abused by those two deputies who were, frankly, were bullies. And then they got abused by the inmates. So you, what you have is deflated, depressed people. When you lose a jail, people, the first thing they say is, hey, well, what did I do? Why is it my fault, you know? And the thing is that this was a very high-talented group that all you had to do is get them moving again. And so basically what I think Ken and I did, Ken had more work than I did because the tool policy was all messed up, the key policy was all messed up. So he had to work out a lot of new policies. But my job basically was just, I'm not Terry Henry, okay, and just getting, helping these people to get moving again and regain their confidence.
Right.
But I was proud to work with those folks. I thought, I mean, I could name names right down the line of people that were strong and worked and helped get that place together again. So the name of the game was become functioning again, get the program started, get the people working again. This CDCC, or the which is run by Petruccio, great shape. They didn't miss a beat because they had wonderful people in there. But the thing is, you try to get a little bit of education going. You try to get the drug and alcohol people start doing stuff. You get the employment thing working again. You start staffing inmates again to get them working. What it is to get them back, start to get them back toward a normal, toward a normal work day.
Mm-hmm.
And they've responded quickly. They're good people down there.
Yeah.
Now we had little interims. We had several like little mini incidents down there. There's a period when they got out of their cells in D block, which wasn't very good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They were able to defeat the, there's no rebar in D block, and so what happens is they could just cut through the damn bricks, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a period when they're chopping their way out of the block. There's a couple issues over in J block where they got rowdy and things like that, so we had a couple aftershocks. But I think by and large, you know, we did all right.
Yeah, and you rebuilt a facility that is totally completely different from what it was pre-riot.
Oh yeah, the thing is that, and I don't think it's more, you know, I mean, of course the place is destroyed. We didn't have any education building left. The kitchen was just, kitchen too was destroyed. You know, I left in July, so I left before any major construction went on.
Mm.
Rebuilding the block, but the most of the stuff I did was with the staff and trying to get the staff back on the board again.
Right, right. And so overall, they bounced back, like you said, pretty quickly, and because they were great employees to begin with, they came back fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that took some damage. And some of those poor guys that are caught inside those cages, the, what do they call those?
Switch boxes.
The switch boxes, you know, and the people who are top of the burning buildings, and things like that. But there was many individual acts of heroism. And I could go down the list of names of the people among the counselors, the psychologists, the people I supervised, who just, you know, they just needed somebody to guide them and appreciate them instead of bullying them, and that's what had happened. They'd been abused before the thing ever happened, before the riot ever happened.
Right. Now, John, do you have a psychological background, a psychiatry background?
No, I'm a social worker.
Okay. I was just wondering, you know, how you knew how to deal with these people. I guess you just got to meet them where they're at and just deal with each one individually and help them through and.
Well, some people, the way you do it, like I forget Bonnie's name, some people have trouble coming back. So what you do is you meet them at the front gate and you walk through with them, you know, and they get accustomed again. You know, and so the thing is regaining their confidence and regaining their confidence around the inmates. Ken Kyler and I both had spent a lot of time with inmates. Ken was very well respected among the inmates. And so I think it's as long as we were out there and, you know, and the other staff, they could go along and do and be with the inmates. See, but I think like Joyce Corman was there. She was excellent. Jeff Diddy, Tony Petruccio, Don Kelschner. I don't know whether you've talked to him yet or not. He was right in the middle of it.
I'm going to have him. Yeah, I haven't to reach out to him yet. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't think we did anything magic. I really don't. I just think, but we were both had experience with corrections. We had experience with bad situations. And I think that helped us.
I know I talked to Jeff Beard about it, and he said when Owen said, you know, we'd like you to come down and come to Camp Hill, he said, well, I guess pretty much he said he'd do it if he could bring the right team with him, and you and Ken and the others that you mentioned,
right,
the right team. So, you know, had he not been able to bring you and Ken Kyler along, it may not have been such a successful or as quick as a recovery as it was. So, you know, I'm glad he was able to bring you along.
I'll be a little more modest than that. There were natural leaders among that group. I think after the confusion, you just need some outside people to look at it. But I think they're just fine because there are some real natural leaders down there.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have come forward eventually.
Mm. Wow. Thank you for taking time to talk to me about these two issues. Is there any advice you would like to, as we wrap this up, any advice you would like to give to listeners who may be working in corrections about, you know, how to get through a situation, an incident, a riot?
You know, I think a lot, you're always going to have incidents. I mean, that's just part of corrections. You're going to have things where people get hit, where there's work strikes or hunger strikes or yard fights, or, you know, that's going to happen. I think the key to this, if you have reasonable relationships with the inmates, and what I mean is you hold them accountable, but you're not, you know, you're all right with them. I don't know how to put that. Well, the inmates respect you, and they know you're going to enforce the rules, but they also know you're going to take care of them, and you know, make sure they get to their meals and they get their boots fixed and all that kind of stuff. I think that a lot of times that relationship holds them from taking the place over, because they said, also, wait, I'm not going to hit this block sergeant. You know, the guy got me on the phone the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, don't play with inmates, right? Don't mess with them. Don't make them look bad in front of their fellows. You know what I mean? Because then they have to fight. Then they're forced to react.
Mm. Wow. Great advice. I want to thank you so much for participating.
Sure.